Once again, to another edition of what I call American Exposé. Listeners, this is Chris Gerner. It's the 24th of August, 2005. The deceptions continue all over the world. We are confused about what to do and what to listen to and how to do research, many of us. But AmericanExposé.com stands above the rest, or most of the rest, as far as the information and documentation available to everyone. And this is very, very important, as we've been deceived, as I've had a lifetime of research that I've done for my concern, for our country. It's just flowed over into where we are now, reestablished on Republic Broadcasting Network. Pretty amazing to come together here. And your outpouring of support for this broadcast is most appreciated, listeners. We are a groundswell of people waking up. There's just no doubt about it. And I just want to let you know that certainly the collapse of communism was a fraud. We're going to sort of center on that today with Hansa because of the deceptions that we're living today with the press. I see here in a statement, the national consultations in Russia, Real Plus 5, what has been achieved, listeners? Besides the following priority measures based on Agenda 21 were released in Russia, the full report on the implementation of Agenda 21 in Russia is contained in country profiles prepared by the Russian government for the UNCSD, and I would presume that would be Council on State Governments. No, that would be something else, the UNCSD. Council on Sustainable Development, listeners. That's what it should be. Social policy, October 13, 1996, the State Duma, the Parliament, adopted in the first reading federal law, quote, on subsistence minimum in the Russian Federation, end quote. Once again, on subsistence minimum on the Russian Federation, end quote, which defines the principle for fixing the level of the subsistence minimum and for social support for the poorest families. It provides for regular indexation of the minimal wages, pensions, stipends. In cooperation with the World Bank in 1997, it is planned to bring into life two pilot programs on social support of the poorest families, which have an income lower than 50% of the subsistence minimum. In future, this method will be applied all over the country. Now, we've already covered, and we'll probably cover again with Hansa, distributism. Distribution of wealth, redistribution of wealth, listeners, which is happening here today in America. It's going to continue to happen. Agenda 21 is all about this. And this is the point and the problem that needs to be dealt with by the entire country. And why is it the best kept secret in the world, people? Agenda 21, the plan for the human race in the 21st century. Communist China has it. Communist Vietnam has it. Communist Russia has it. Oh, but Russia's not communist anymore. You've got to be joking. If somebody tells you that, they're only paying attention to the minimal news that is given to us by the minimal television that gives you any kind of intelligence at all. So understand all these dimensions, and most of you are, and certainly we appreciate your support and your concern for our country. That is the bottom line. This is the last outpost in the world to make a change to stop the totalitarian communist maneuvers that are going on right in our backyard and front yard under the guise of Agenda 21. We shall return with Hansa Molina. Stay with us. Back to the the broadcast. I'm Chris Gerner with the broadcast named American Exposé. Once again, out of this report, in cooperation with the World Bank in 1997, it is planned to bring into life two pilot programs on social support of the poorest families, which have an income lower than 50% of the subsistence minimum. In future, this method will be applied all over the country. And this is, once again, statement, national consultations in Russia, Rio Plus 5, which has been achieved with a question mark. And once again, Rio Plus 5, 1992 Earth Summit, which brought about the Biodiversity Treaty, Agenda 21. And now we have Hansa Molina with us. Hansa, welcome to the broadcast.
Hello, Chris. Glad to be here with you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And certainly, we have been fed a lot of propaganda in this country, have we not, Hansa?
Absolutely. And the problem is that the acceptance of communist secret police, basically communist espionage, namely the KGB and sister services, as they spread these kind of disinformation throughout the years, basically, based on the already Lenin strategy of the new economic policy, which he implemented during the 1920s. That was very, very much the biggest mistake of the Western societies, as far as I'm concerned, because even Lenin, and I'm quoting from Anatoly Golitsyn's first book, New Lies for Old. I urge people to get this book and read it, because it's really explains in detail how it all happened. The new economic policy is the major precedent for the perestroika implementation of today. And let me quote real quick from page 17, the lesson of the NEP, the new economic policy. The disinformation of the new economic policy period has been successful, since through Western eyes, the threat of communism under the NEP seemed to have become diffused. Fear of Bolshevism waned. The position of anti-communists was undermined. Expectations of rapprochement were aroused. The Western public, reluctant to make sacrifices, urged their governments toward further accommodation with the Soviet regime. In reality, of course, the challenge of communism has been reinforced. Western expectations were later to be rudely shattered. But the communist strategist had learned the lesson that Western leaders could be deceived and induced to make mistakes in their assessments of and policy toward the Soviet Union. This information had, in fact, created favorable conditions for the success of Soviet internal policy, activist diplomacy, and Comintern activity, which is the Communist International, the use of international communists. The inspiration was later used for setting up the long-term policy during the years 1956 to 1960 by the Khrushchev regime. There was a very interesting note from Mr. Golitsyn on page 41. The GRU, Russian Soviet military intelligence, set up a secret training manual for internal use only. It was written by GRU officer Popov that described in about 80 pages the technique of disinformation. The book classified different types of disinformation as strategic, political, military, technical, economic, and diplomatic. Listed the channels through which disinformation can be disseminated as, let me quote it real quick, the declaration and speeches of leading statesmen, officials of the originating country, official government documents, newspapers, and other materials published in that country, foreign publications inspired by agents working among foreign journalists and other experts, special operations in support of disinformation, and also agents of influence and other agents in foreign countries. So this is just how they did it. Of course, when we look at, Chris, what Golitsyn predicted, namely the liberalization, so-called liberalization in Eastern Europe, we can see that precisely he was 100% correct, because for a communist to set up these phony dissidents, to let them use their basically informational channels to spread their so-called problems with the communists, and the information about these problems, and in some cases also with jail sentences, the information about such things, to let them spread it around the world, basically, to create their credibility as genuine dissidents. That is not a problem for the communists to set up such an operation. When I look at it from the point of view when I lived in a communist Czechoslovakia, since all the information, the spread of information was totally controlled by the communists, this kind of possibility is totally out of it's impossible to happen. Moreover, such groups of dissidents pretending to be freedom-loving people and anti-communists, such group of dissidents is totally impossible to exist for more than 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The communists would totally dismantle it and brought these people to prison. Nobody would ever know about them. So, you know, then, of course, when we go to biographies of these people, we see that they have contacts and connections to the communist regime. I have many details on this subject. We have to show the listeners that this, what Russia does today, is not some kind of evolution or development of the recent years, but a targeted strategy of the communist bloc. Set up, actually, the idea came since the foundation of the Soviet Union, but it was implemented, namely, by Khrushchev, but it was also used by Stalin, and
so there's been a directive for many, many years to bring us to this point right now where we are, to be deceived that communism is dead. We don't have to worry about Russia because they're democratizing. And yet we're seeing in the paper dated August 22nd from the Free Market News, China and Russia have engaged in large-scale military exercises to rehearse battle tactics, according to the New York Times. Two countries deployed naval ships, planes, and over 10,000 troops to northeast China for the exercises. Russia also plans to test its new TU-95MS fighters and TU-22M3 bombers. New fighters and bombers, Hansa. Why would they be developing new weaponry if they weren't going to use it? And where are they going to use it, listeners?
Well,
there's the question to ask.
Well, the problem is that the only thing we rely on as far as our security is when we deal with countries that are supposedly democratic or friendly to America, which in case of Russia is totally total lie. But let's say that for the sake of argument that's true. Who's the enemy? Would they gearing up for? I mean, what are they afraid of? You know, they have 200 bunkers, and maybe even more. I mean, we don't really know, but the assessment is 200 nuclear bunker cities, basically the size of Washington D.C.
Okay, let me ask you a question now. Why wouldn't George Bush be concerned about this?
Well, see, the problem is more of a
being that we're addicted, huh?
The problem is more of an embarrassment to the official American policy. As far as I'm concerned, if you think of it, the George Bush elder was the one who signed the disarmament treaty with the Soviet Union, even though first he didn't believe it. He didn't want to do it, as far as my information is, and he was opposed to it when he was in the Reagan administration. But then, of course, the economic optimism and the opening of so-called new markets played the role, and so the West basically jumped in into a 15-year-long. Basically, so-called era that opened up some possibilities, but in the long run, this will prove very much problematic, and sort of the results are showing today. When we look at Russia and China, that the real results are showing. Because, you know, at the same time when they ship to us cheap products from China made by communist slave labor, at the same time they are building their military. So, you know, this was not foreseen by our leaders at the time because of their total lack of understanding.
Yeah, but we're understanding this. We're reading books.
Right.
We understand Anatoly Golitsyn. Why in the world would our administration be so lackadaisical about the situations that are being presented before us?
Well, the thing is, and Golitsyn stated...
I mean, we're concerned. We're concerned about this. Why isn't our administration concerned about this?
Well, let me put it this way. The Russians, of course, couldn't start this kind of strategy without infiltrating our intelligence services. They worked on it since the end of World War II. We talked about Henry Kissinger and read on the air in one of your shows that he was already suspected of being Soviet agent.
Okay, keep that thought in place. Do not forget Henry Kissinger as we come back with Hans and Molina listeners. Anticommunistanalyst.com is his website. It's on our website, AmericanExplosé.com, run by Dennis and Darren. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, listeners, welcome back to the broadcast. Here I see Russia to cooperate with the West in former USSR with a question mark. The cooperation with the West on the post-Soviet space is possible only if strategic interests coincide, it says. It's an article on our website. It seems that Russian administration has become rather active on the post-Soviet space after a series of revolutions in several republics of the former USSR. And keep in mind, the landmass is quite large on the planet here. Russia and its quote-unquote republics, listeners. And this initiative, they say, well, let's go on with this for a little bit more, Hansa. A source in the Kremlin that wished to remain anonymous said that Russia would have to build a civilized dialogue with the EU, that's the European Union, and the USA regarding the issue of mutual relations on the post-Soviet space. The initiative, the source said, is supposed to strengthen Russia's positions in the Commonwealth of Independent States. The CIS listeners, this comes from Pravda, and it's dated the 24th of August. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take you off of Henry Kissinger, Hansa. But see, we're dealing with propaganda, and we're dealing with Henry Kissinger from the past, who has a checkered past that has never been prosecuted for anything whatsoever.
Yeah, but, well, it's a it's an embarrassment. Basically, that's what it is. Henry Kissinger, and I'm quoting from a brilliant article written by my friend Jeff Nyquist. And let me quote from the headline there. Now the Republicans control the National Security Council. We ought to recall that a line of succession may be traced from Henry Kissinger to Brent Scowcroft to National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. Given the rising power of China together with thinly veiled Soviet renewal in Russia, it could be argued that Kissinger and Scowcroft led American policy seriously astray under past Republican administrations. Will Ms. Rice be any different? Should we accept the same old, quote, talk and run policies from yet a third generation of Kissinger's spawn? Then basically, let me quote what he says about Kissinger. This is documented, so, you know, it's not only Mr. Nyquist, but it's also matter of record. Kissinger talked President Nixon into unilaterally destroying America's biological arsenal in 1969. That gave the Soviet communists basically advancement in that sphere of research. And of course, you know, they use any means to pursue that aspect. And, you know, the one time information was that Russia has so much anthrax built that they can wipe out the entire planet, basically. Then, of course, Kissinger prepared the way for Soviet nuclear superiority with the ABM and SALT treaties. He lobbied for disadvantageous ceasefire agreement with Vietnam. He manipulated the collapse of Rhodesia, which afterward declared itself a Marxist-Leninist state.
Which is Zimbabwe today, listener.
Right.
In turmoil.
Yeah, big-time problem down there and all over Africa, for that matter.
That's true.
Then he misadvised President Ford when the communists once more broke the peace in Vietnam so that the whole of Indochina fell, with millions perishing in the aftermath. And finally, as if to sow even greater confusion into U.S. policy, it was Kissinger who lent intellectual legitimacy and prestige to Nixon's China policy. Yeah, this is just the policies. Now, let me go to the facts. Kissinger, we stated it here, but it needs to be explained again.
Yes.
There was a press conference on August 14, 1975, when Henry Kissinger was still working for the Nixon administration. That was back then the Secretary of State. A reporter asked the question, Mr. Secretary, we received a report that a Colonel General Michael Golinevsky, who was a Polish Army intelligence officer, had identified a list of KGB and GRU agents and officers who have since been arrested, tried, and convicted. The general also identified you, Mr. Kissinger, as having worked for a Soviet intelligence network codenamed ODRA, headquartered in West Germany during World War II. At the same time, you were a U.S. Army counter-interrogator and instructor in military intelligence school. Is this true? And if not, how do you explain your name being on General Golinevsky's list? Kissinger, of course, denied anything and claimed that he doesn't know General Colonel Golinevsky. But that's, you know, Golinevsky worked with the... he was responsible for exposing so many communist spies... quoting from the article, a man who has been talked about and gossiped about in the highest circles. But Kissinger said he had not heard of him. You know, what's really going on? Then there's much more damaging information about Kissinger. That involves in the office of CIA counterintelligence, there was a man, deputy of the chief of counterintelligence, Leonard McCoy, who suspected Kissinger in an incident involving the arrest and execution of an American spy in codenamed Trigon in Russia. The incriminating piece of evidence against Kissinger involved an NSA intercept from the Soviet embassy in Washington. It was a cable sent by Ambassador Anatoly Dobrynin to Moscow referring to, quote, advice, unquote, given by Professor Kissinger.
We'll be back to continue with Hans and Melina, listeners. Quite important broadcast today. Stay with us. I'm concerned. I hope you are as well. Welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Chris Gerner with American Exposé. Be sure to support these sponsors, listeners, on the network. Support this broadcast. And the Big Berkey, you can never have enough filters for the Big Berkey that you already purchased. You can get more, and certainly that number is 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Debbie will be a regular on Monday on the second hour promoting the Berkfield because... the water shortage is in place. The engineered water shortage is in place. This is World Water Week, by the way, from the UN system. But yet we're dealing right now with the deception that communism is dead and that we have nothing to fear from Russia and China having these new military exercises overseas with a new jet fighter, a new bomber. And we have nothing to fear, listeners. There's no concern by the major press at all whatsoever. Hansa, continue with your thoughts as we went into commercial pause.
Well, that's about Henry Kissinger. Basically, the acceptance of the communists as genuine or as equal partners they slowly began to basically maneuver our acceptance of communism as just another political thought or ideological thought, without realizing the Western society never realized really what kind of big problem and grave danger this creates for our societal survival, basically, because you know these societies, the communist societies, are created on the foundation of a crime. Basically, that's what it is. The freedom was stolen from people. They were put in. Many were arrested and tried and sentenced to death. And these criminal these crimes of communism were never punished. So you know what we're looking at is basically we are signing or we sign agreements with criminals and disregarding their crimes and their non-willingness to punish these crimes according to law.
Think about Vietnam. Let's go back to Vietnam. You were alive and well. You we were all watching. The Soviet Union, which was Russia, Soviet Union, Communist China supplied North Vietnam with their weapons. Communism is alive and well now in Vietnam. We had rules of engagement in that war, rules of engagement coming from the UN system, and now we're allies with Russia, but yet we're allies with Communist China, too, because we have products made in Communist China all over our store shelves today. And so we have confusing situations from the past to the present to those of us that have a mind to think and eyes to see.
Yeah, right. Except, That's totally the problem. See, we accepted communists as equal and accepted their services to us as far as supplying us with the cheaper products. One has to question the role of the trade unions in Western Europe and America, basically jacking up the price of labor here. Golitsyn also stated in his books that the Western trade unions were already infiltrated by communists. So my assessment of the problem is that when you have somebody working for, let's say, for a big company producing planes, even for the military, and the person that would normally get let's say $30 an hour is getting $80 an hour, then the parts will be built somewhere else. So I think that this is closed circle of basically human greed, and when you have trade unions in the West going on strike for their salaries every 3 years, the people that own the company have to look for the labor elsewhere. And guess what? China is always gladly supplying their slave labor, and therefore removing our production abilities from America to China, to communist China, which serves their military strategy also, because as long as we don't have any production means here in America, then we can basically produce any weapons during the wartime, which is just the ultimate goal of the communists, because they themselves are totally ready. And I think we should go into the details so the listeners should understand that this is really intent of the communists to create these kind of problems, and not only development of recent years. Let me quote from page 340 from the New Lies for Old, what Golitsyn predicted in regards to so-called liberalization in Eastern Europe. He says, quote, liberalization, unquote, in Eastern Europe would probably involve the return to power in Czechoslovakia of Alexander Dubček and his associates. If it should be extended to East Germany, demolition of the Berlin Wall might even be contemplated. Now, in case of Dubček, he was the leading communist of the so-called era of Prague Spring in Czechoslovakia. And just recently, just a couple of days ago, it was the anniversary of the 1968 Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia, which, you know, when we look at Dubček, I reported about him. I went in and did research who he was, and I came really with quite an interesting, you know, namely he was, at the age of 5 or 6, he was his family went to Soviet Union. And he lived there for basically just about 18 years. So then he returned back to Czechoslovakia, and he was already a high-level communist official. Dubček was involved in trials of innocent people, basically, or people that opposed the communists, and there are witnesses that testify that he was basically involved in sentencing at least 3 people to hanging that were executed, basically, during those years. Dubček also studied in Soviet Union during the 1950s or so. So he had the preparation for these kind of changes. Also, the surprise changes in Czechoslovak leadership when Dubček assumed the role, the leading role, when he became the general secretary of the Czechoslovak Communist Party in 1968, show that Dubček was actually the Russians, as Golitsyn states correctly, used the 1968 scenario as a sort of rehearsal for the today perestroika. They wanted to see how the West will react to it, to the so-called liberalization of the communist country, which Czechoslovakia was back in that time. And also they wanted to test their own abilities to control these kind of so-called liberalization situations in Czechoslovakia. So, of course, when they tested all of that, the major thing that shows that this was targeted and rehearsal was the information that I received from my sources in Eastern Europe, that at the same time when Dubček was pushing for this so-called liberalization, he also ordered, under orders from the Soviet secret services, he ordered the Czechoslovak intelligence to orchestrate communist coup in African country Ghana. So he was fully aware of this operation codenamed Alex that was implemented during the 1968, replacing the African Ghana leader. They had military coup that basically took down the regime of pro-Moscow and Moscow asset. Nkrumah was the name of the president in Ghana. Of course, he returned later on, but Czechoslovak intelligence was involved in this under orders from Moscow, and Dubček had full knowledge and okayed the whole operation.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you have... how can you have liberalization on one end and support subverting, you know, basically anti-communist country into a communist one? So that gives Golitsyn a lot of credit because the rehearsal was used for this situation in Czechoslovakia. Russians basically wanted to test the situation, how the people will react. Also, the facts regarding if this was genuine counter-revolution, as the Russians call it, why was it that the Czechoslovak leaders that were involved in this so-called liberalization were never tried and basically executed? Nothing ever happened to Dubček. As a matter of fact, he was later made ambassador of Czechoslovakia in, I believe, in Turkey, till 1969, and he was quietly sent down. Now, what I read about Dubček's return to power after the so-called collapse of communism, Golitsyn predicted this in 1984. This book, New Lies for, was written and published in 1984. Now, this is exactly true because, according to my information, Dubček became the chairman of the Czechoslovak parliament in 1989 after the so-called collapse of communism.
There you have it. So there's a long-term strategy involved here, listeners, that we're witnessing it today. Let's see if Bob in Kansas has a question for you, Hansa, or something at all. Bob, welcome to the broadcast.
Well, hello.
Yes.
Now, I've got some points to bring up. He was mentioning the labor unions.
Yes.
Well, the actual first labor union in America was started by Engels, the co-author of Communist Manifesto, in the late 1800s. The actual first labor union. So they're based in themselves of collectivism, from each his ability to each his need. Everybody gets paid the same, but they all produce various amounts of work.
Okay.
Secondly, it was our Westerners, bankers, that funded all these creatures.
Right.
You know, so the real problem, without all the intricacies of what the boogeyman across the sea is up to, is the boogeyman in Washington. Now, next, all one has to do about this trade situation that he mentioned, which he's right about it, is read Das Kapital. And to sum it all up, we will produce the rope. We will sell the rope to the West. They will hang themselves with, and they have done that. Now, we are a global communist world, more or less, collectivist, run by gangsters. What I would like him to delve into while he has time today is the actual gangster activity of these various criminals that he's been mentioning, you know, that run things. And I'd like him to talk a little bit about Marcus Wolf.
Hansa?
Marcus Wolf? I really don't know much about him to begin with, so...
He's a Zionist. He was the head of the Stasi. And he owns a mansion in Germany, a mansion in Israel, and a mansion in America. He got very wealthy being a gangster in the communist realm.
Oh, that's just a thing that, you know, we're looking at the gain of money, the so-called former communist gain, but that's not their money. They can't really, you know, use it for anything else but to support a strategy. They have no free access to these kind of money because they are controlled. The spread of money is controlled.
Apparently, Marcus Wolf had access to a lot of money. He got fabulously wealthy off running a secret police.
Well, it's not the intent, and it was never the intent of these people. As a matter of fact, there were people, in Czechoslovakia that were involved in the narco-trafficking that had little... money coming to them aside. I'm saying little. Then it was a lot of money. But they were basically stealing from the operations. They were uncovered and they were tried and they were executed. So the communists don't tolerate any deviances as far as the strategy. They create these people and set them up with a lot of money in order to pretend that they have nothing to do with the state. But it's the state that runs money, state operation that's behind it, and the intent is always done. The operation continues, so these
people... But don't the ones at the very top benefit, I mean, monetarily, not only power-wise, but monetarily, and don't the bankers of the world have some stake in this game? I mean, why would the bankers of the world fund this if they didn't have a stake in it?
Well, there's not much what the bankers can do with the communists equipped with nuclear weapons, basically. The promises of the communists are there. That's not questionable. That's true. But see, it's the communists that hold the upper hand on the bankers. Now, this question, I wanted to address this before. I'm looking at the back page of the New Lies for All, written by Anatoly Golitsyn, and he says right here that... The strategy of strengthening the communist bloc while presenting an appearance of communist disunity is neatly expressed in Sun Tzu's strategy. All their warfare is based on deception. Now, he says there was publication by Alexander Rutskoy in the Sunday Time, published in 1995, and he says the headline was, Russia's main enemy is the creation of a global dictatorship by the West under the crafty label New World Order. And Golitsyn says, this revealing remark dialectically accuses the West of precisely the objective pursued secretly by the Russian-Chinese strategists, as explained by Anatoly Golitsyn. It is well known that pathological liars accuse their enemies of harboring intentions which are in fact their own. Even Rutskoy's own fellow, quote, ex-communists, admit to the objective of merging and therefore abolishing nation-states in accordance with Lenin's teaching that, quote, we set ourselves the ultimate aim of destroying the state.
But Lenin had syphilis of the brain. I mean, he was a criminal in and of himself. I mean,
right. These
people are criminals, don't you agree?
Right, but in the sense that communists have self... It's the higher level of criminal behavior because they have self-policing mechanism, and anybody who deviates from him, like there are examples during the Stalin era, let's say Trotsky, who deviated from the set stage, are people who wanted to pursue their own. And I have really great examples. Also, Alexander Dubček, who was killed, murdered by the communists because he wouldn't accept the split of Czechoslovakia, and he was driven off the hill in his car. His driver was captain of the secret police, also movie car stuntsman. The driver jumped off, and Dubček ended up in the woods and crashing the car, basically.
Well, it's really no different than the gangsters, because if you get caught taking money from the operation, they kill you. If you kill the wrong person in an assassination, they kill you. If the gangsters do the same thing, I just say, take these creatures out and execute them as fast as you can get your hands on them. That'd be the beginning of the solving of the problem.
Bob, I appreciate your thoughts. We'll continue on the other side. Stay with us. Okay, listeners, welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Chris Kerner. We have Hansa Molina with us today. We will move into the second hour with Hansa. But I want you to hear something that Dennis has put up on the website, dated August 23rd. Putin sees 20-year coronation. Culture is difficult to overcome. The Mother Russia's culture seems more difficult than most. From the brutality of the czars, to the genocide of Stalin, to the odd unraveling of the world's largest and most lumbering empire, Russia, the Soviet Union, has been a difficult country for the West to predict, and almost as difficult for its own citizens to analyze. Two countries in one, Eastern and Western, civilized and savage. Russia has swung between polar opposites, and most lately has mimicked some of the habits of the democratic capitalist West. That may all be ending now as President Vladimir Putin comes under a seemingly endless barrage of friendly fire in the form of bills, amendments, suggestions, and articles in important Russian media, all imploring him to stay in power for an additional term, or perhaps several, or perhaps forever. Most recently, the head of the Russian Internal Republic of Mary Ill, Leonid Makhlov, joined the chorus of Putin's retention, arguing for a legislative extension to allow Putin to serve further. The head of state in this country should be able to be elected not twice in a row, but three times. And an individual presidential term should not be limited to 4 years, but to at least five and a maximum of 7 years, end quote. Interfax News Agency quoted Makhlov as saying. And Makhlov reportedly added, quote, of course, the Russian presidents, and the Russian president, and you see, this is the point, people. Russia has a president for our dumbing down process, our consumption. Everybody is a president in other countries for our consumption. We aren't taught the Constitution like we would like it to have been taught when we really realize what a constitutional republic is all about. And it's been a long-term strategy to dumb us down. But let me go back to this Makhlov quote. Of course, the Russian president has clearly defined his position on the Constitution. But there is such a thing as a situation when you have to overcome your own reservations for people's sake. I can see absolutely no breach of democratic rules if State Duma deputies initiate the tabling of the relevant amendments to the country's constitution. Russia now has a very serious chance to comp- complete a breakthrough in the economy because a period of political stability has been ushered in. The majority of businesses and society have faith in the existing authorities, end quote. A KGB alumnus, Putin, is already an imposing figure who has already done an enormous amount to rein in Russia's admittedly undigested private sector, basically concentrating on breaking down and recontrolling Russia's public media, and now, with the takeover of Yukos, its oil sector as well. An unbridled Putin in power, to stay virtually as long as he likes, will probably offer more of the same. An administration continually more hostile to human rights, dismissive of an open media, and slowing, if not halting, Russia's stumbling advances toward a more developed economy. We'll deal with this on the other side with Hansa, Take Roger, and the information is flowing on American Exposé, listeners. We'll be right back. Stay with us.